Chapter 3. It was past 11. Mushkin knew that he could find at the Apanchin's house no one but the general himself, who might be kept in town by his duties and yet not be at home. He thought that the general might perhaps take him at once to Pavlovsk, but he particularly wanted to make one call before then. At the risk of missing Apanchin and putting off his visit to Pavlovsk till the next day, Mushkin decided to look for the house to which he so particularly wished to go. This visit was, however, risky for him in one respect. He was perplexed and hesitated. He knew he would find the house in Gorohovy Street, not far from Sadovy Street, and decided to go there, hoping that on his way there he would succeed in making up his mind. As he approached the point where the two streets intersect, he was surprised himself at his extraordinary emotion. He had not expected his heart to throb so painfully. One house attracted his attention in the distance, no doubt from its peculiar appearance, and Mushkin afterwards remembered saying to himself, "That must be the very house." With great curiosity, he walked towards it to verify his conjecture. He felt that he would for some reason particularly dislike to have guessed right. It was a large, gloomy house of three stories, of a dirty green colour, and no pretensions to architecture. A few houses of this kind, built at the end of the last century, are still standing, almost unchanged, in those streets of Petersburg, where everything changes so quickly. They are built solidly, with thick walls and very few windows, often with gratings on the ground-floor windows. Usually there is a money-changer's shop below, and the owner, of the sect of Skotzi, serves in the shop and lodges above it. Without and within, the house is somehow inhospitable and frigid. It seems to be keeping something dark and hidden, and why it seems so from the mere look of the house, it would be hard to explain. Architectural lines have, of course, a secret of their own. These houses are occupied almost entirely by tradespeople. Going up to the gate and examining the inscription on it, Mushkin read, "The House of the Hereditary and Honourable Citizen Ragozhin." Hesitating no longer, he opened the glass door, which slammed noisily behind him, and went up the great staircase to the first floor. It was a roughly made stone staircase and dark. The walls were painted red. He knew that Ragozhin and his mother and brother occupied the whole second floor of this dreary house. The servant who opened the door to Mushkin admitted him without taking his name and led him a long way. They passed through one grand drawing room with walls painted to look like marble, an oak block floor and furniture of 1820, coarse and heavy. They passed through some tiny rooms, winding and turning, mounting two or three steps and going down as many, till at last they knocked at a door. The door was opened by Parfion Semyonovich himself. Seeing Mushkin, he turned so pale and was so petrified that for a time he stood like a statue, gazing with fixed and frightened eyes and twisting his mouth into a strange smile of utter bewilderment, as though he felt the prince's visit something incredible and almost miraculous. Though Mushkin had expected something of the sort, he was surprised.
"Parfion, perhaps I've come at the wrong moment. I can go away, you know," he said at last with embarrassment.
"Not at all, not at all," said Parfion, recovering himself at last. "You are welcome. Come in."
They addressed one another like intimate friends. In Moscow they had often spent long hours together, and there had been meetings, moments of which had left a lasting memory in their hearts. Now they had not met for over 3 months. Rogozhin's face did not lose its pallor, and there still was a faint spasmodic twitching to be seen in it. Though he welcomed his guest, his extraordinary confusion still persisted. While he led Mushkin in and had made him sit down in an easy chair, the latter happened to turn to him and stood still, impressed by his strange and heavy gaze. Something seemed to transfix Mushkin, and at the same time some memory came back to him, something recent, painful, and gloomy. Not sitting down, but standing motionless, he looked Rogozhin straight in the eyes for some time. At the first moment they seemed to gleam more brightly. At last Rogozhin smiled, though still rather disconcerted and hardly knowing what he was doing. "Why do you stare so?" he muttered. "Sit down."
Mushkin sat down.
"Parfion," he said, "tell me plainly. Did you know that I was coming to Petersburg today or not?"
"I thought you were coming. And you see, I was not mistaken," Rogojin added, smiling sarcastically. "But how could I tell you would come today?"
Mushkin was even more struck by a certain harsh abruptness and strange irritability in the question.
"Even if you had known I should come today, why be so cross about it?" murmured Mushkin gently in confusion.
"But why do you ask?"
"As I got out of the train this morning, I saw two eyes that looked at me just as you did just now from behind."
"You don't say so."
"Whose eyes were they?" Rogojin muttered suspiciously. Mushkin fancied that he shuddered.
"I don't know. I almost think I fancied it in the crowd. I begin to be always fancying things. Do you know, Parfion, my friend, I feel almost as I did 5 years ago, when I used to have fits."
"Well, perhaps it was your fancy."
"I don't know," muttered Parfion.
The friendly smile on his face was very unbecoming to him at that moment, as though there was something disjointed in it, and however much he tried, he could not put it together.
"Are you going abroad again?" he asked, and suddenly added, "And do you remember how we came from Pskov in the same carriage together last autumn? I was coming here, and you, in your cloak. Do you remember? And the gaiters?"
And Rogojin suddenly laughed, this time with open malice, as though relieved that he had succeeded in expressing it in some way.
"Are you settled here for good?"
"Yes, I'm at home. Where else should I be?"
"It's a long time since we've met. I've heard such things about you. Not like yourself."
"People will say anything," Rogojin observed dryly.
"You've turned off all your followers, and you stay in your old home and live quietly. Well, that's a good thing. Is it your own house, or does it belong to all of you in common?"
"The house is my mother's. That's the way to her rooms across the corridor."
"And where is your brother living?"
"My brother, Semyon Semyonovich, is in the lodge."
"Is he married?"
"He's a widower."
"What do you want to know?"
Mushkin looked at him and did not answer. He was suddenly thoughtful and seemed not to have heard the question. Rogojin waited and did not insist. They were silent for a while.
"I guessed it was your house, 100 paces away, as I came along," said Mushkin.
"How was that?"
"I don't know at all. Your house has a look of your whole family and your Rogojin manner of life. But if you ask me how I know that, I can't explain it. A disordered fancy, I suppose. It makes me uneasy, indeed, that it should trouble me so much. I had an idea before that you lived in such a house, but as soon as I saw it, I thought at once, that's just the sort of house he ought to have."
"I say." Rogojin smiled vaguely, not quite understanding Mushkin's obscure thought.
"It was my grandfather built the house," he observed. "It was always tenanted by the Huledikovs, who are Skotsi, and there are tenants still."
"It's so dark." "You're living here in darkness," said Mushkin, looking round the room.
It was a big room, lofty and dark, filled with furniture of all sorts, for the most part big business tables, bureau, cupboards, in which were kept business books and papers of some sort. The wide sofa, covered in red morocco, obviously served Rogojin as a bed. Mushkin noticed 2 or 3 books lying on the table at which Rogojin had made him sit down. One of them, Soloviev's History, was open and had a bookmark in it. On the walls there were a few oil paintings in tarnished gold frames. They were dark and grimy, and it was difficult to make out what they represented. One full-length portrait attracted Mushkin's notice. It was the portrait of a man of 50, wearing a frock coat, very long, though of European cut, and 2 medals round his neck. He had a very scanty short grey beard, a yellow wrinkled face with suspicious, secretive, and melancholy eyes.
"Is that your father?" asked Mushkin.
"Yes, it is," Rogojin answered with an unpleasant grin, as though expecting some rude jest at his dead father's expense to follow immediately.
"He wasn't one of the old believers, was he?"
No, he used to go to church. But it's true, he used to say that the old form of belief was truer. He had a great respect for the Scopsy, too. This used to be his study. Why do you ask, was he an all-believer?
Will you have your wedding here?
Yes, answered Rogojin, almost starting at the unexpected question.
Will it be soon?
Well, you know yourself it doesn't depend on me.
Parfian, I am not your enemy, and I have no intention of interfering with you in any way. I tell you that, as I've told you once before, almost on a similar occasion. When your wedding was arranged in Moscow, I didn't hinder you. You know that. The first time she rushed to me of herself, almost on the wedding day, begging me to save her from you. It's her own words I'm repeating to you. Afterwards, she ran away from me, too. You found her again, and were going to marry her, and now they tell me she ran away from you again, here. Is that true?
Lebediev told me so. That's why I've come. But that you'd come together again, I learnt for the first time only yesterday in the train from one of your former friends, Zelyovshev, if you care to know.
I came here with a purpose. I wanted to persuade her to go abroad for the sake of her health. She is not well physically or mentally, her brain especially. And to my mind, she needs great care. I didn't mean to take her abroad myself. It was my plan for her to go without me. I'm telling you the absolute truth. If it's quite true that you've made it up again, I shan't show myself to her, and I'll never come again to see you either. You know I don't deceive you, because I've always been open with you. I've never concealed from you what I think about it, and I've always said that to marry you would be her perdition. Your perdition, too. Even more, perhaps, than hers. If you were to part again, I should be very glad. But I don't intend to disturb or try to part you myself. Don't worry yourself, and don't suspect me. You know yourself whether I was ever really your rival, even when she ran away to me. Now you are laughing. I know what you are laughing at. Yes, we lived apart in different towns, and you know all that for a fact. I explained to you before that I don't love her with love, but with pity. I believe I define it exactly. You said at the time that you understood what I said. Was that true? Did you understand?
Here you are looking at me with hatred. I've come to reassure you, for you are dear to me, too.
I'm very fond of you, Parfion. But now I am going away, and shall never come again. Goodbye.
Mushkin got up.
Stay with me a little, said Parfion softly, sitting still in his place with his head resting on his right hand. It's a long time since I've seen you.
Mushkin sat down. Both were silent again.
When you are not before me, I feel anger against you at once, Lyov Nikolaevich. Every minute of these 3 months that I haven't seen you, I've been angry with you. Not my word, I have. I felt I could have poisoned you. I tell you now, you haven't been sitting a quarter of an hour with me, and all my anger is passing away, and you are as dear to me as you used to be. Stay with me a little.
When I am with you, you believe me. But when I am away, you leave off believing me at once and begin suspecting me. You are like your father, Mushkin answered, with a friendly smile, trying to hide his emotion.
I believe your voice when I am with you. I understand, of course, we can't be put on a level, you and I.
Why do you add that?
And now you are irritated again, said Mushkin, wondering at Rogojin.
Well, brother, our opinion is not asked in the matter, he answered. It's settled without consulting us. You see, we love in different ways, too. There's a difference in everything, he went on softly after a pause. You say you love her with pity. There's no sort of pity for her in me. Then she hates me, too, more than anything. I dream of her every night now. Always that she is laughing at me with other men. And that's what she is doing, brother.
She's going to the altar with me, and she has forgotten to give me a thought, as though she were changing her shoe. Would you believe it, I haven't seen her for 5 days, because I don't dare to go to her. She'll ask me, "What have you come for?" She's covered me with shame.
Shame? How can you?
As though he didn't know. Why, she ran away with you from me on the very wedding day. You said so yourself just now.
Why, you don't believe yourself that...
Didn't she shame me in Moscow with that officer, Zemtyushnikov? I know for certain she did. Then even after she had fixed the wedding day.
Impossible, cried Mushkin.
I know it for a fact, Rogozhin persisted with conviction. She is not that sort of woman, you say. It's no good telling me she's not that sort of woman, brother. That's nonsense. With you, she won't be that sort of woman, and will be horrified herself, maybe, at such doings. But that's just what she is with me. That's the fact. She looks on me as the lowest refuse. I know for a fact that simply to make a laughingstock of me, she got up an affair with Keller. That officer, the man who boxes... You don't know, of course, the trick she played me at Moscow. And the money. The money I've wasted.
And you are marrying her now?
What will you do afterwards? Mushkin asked in horror. Rogozhin bent a lowering, terrible gaze on Mushkin and made no answer. It's 5 days since I've been with her, he went on after a minute's pause. I'm afraid of her turning me out. I'm still mistress in my own house, she says. If I choose, I will get rid of you altogether and go abroad. She told me that already, that she will go abroad, he observed, as if it were in parenthesis, with a peculiar look into Mushkin's eyes. Sometimes it's true. She only does this to scare me. She's always laughing at me somehow. But another time she really scowls and is sullen and won't say a word. That's what I'm afraid of. The other day I thought I'd take her something every time I went to see her. It only made her laugh at me. And afterwards she was really angry about it. She made a present to her maid Katya of a shawl I gave her, the like of which she may never have seen before, though she did live in luxury. And as to when our wedding is to be, I dare not open my lips. A queer sort of bridegroom, when I'm afraid to go and see her. So here I sit... And when I can bear it no longer, I steal past her house on the sly, or hide behind some corner. The other day I was on the watch almost till daybreak at her gate. I fancied there was something going on, and she must have seen me from the window. "What would you have done to me?" she said, "if you had found out I'd deceived you?" I couldn't stand it, and I said, "You know yourself." "What does she know?" "And how do I know?" Rogozhin laughed angrily. At Moscow I couldn't catch her with anyone, though I was always on the track. I took her aside then and said to her once, "You promised to marry me. You are entering an honest family, and do you know what you are now?" I told her what she is.
You told her?
Yeah.
Well?
I wouldn't take you for a footman now, perhaps, she said, let alone be your wife. And I won't go away with that, said I. I'm done for anyway. "'And I'll call Keller, then,' she said. "'I'll tell him, and he'll throw you out by the scruff of your neck.' "'I flew at her and beat her till she was black and blue.'
"'Impossible!' cried Mushkin.
"'I tell you, it was so,' Rogozhin repeated quietly, but with flashing eyes. "'For 36 hours on end I didn't sleep, nor eat, nor drink. "'I didn't leave her room. "'I was on my knees before her. "'If I die,' I said, "'I won't go away till you forgive me.' And if you tell them to throw me out, I'll drown myself. For what should I do now without you? She was like a mad woman all that day. She went. Then she was on the point of killing me with a knife. Then she railed at me. She called Zalyushev, Keller, Zemtyushnikov, and all of them. Showed me to them, put me to shame. Let's make up a party and all go to the theatre tonight, gentlemen. Let him stay here if he won't go. I'm not bound to stay for him. They'll bring you tea, Parfion Semyonovitch, when I am out. You must be hungry by now. She came back from the theatre alone. They're cowards and sneaks, she said. They're afraid of you, and they frighten me. They say, he won't go away like that. He will cut your throat, maybe. But I'll go into my bedroom and not even lock the door, so much for my being afraid of you. so that you may see and know it. Have you had any tea?
No, I said, and I'm not going to.
I've done my part, and this behaviour doesn't suit you at all. And she did as she said. She didn't lock her door. In the morning she came out and laughed.
Have you gone crazy? She asked.
Why, you'll die of hunger.
Forgive me, said I.
I don't want to forgive you. I won't marry you. I've said so. Have you been sitting on that chair all night? Haven't you been asleep?
No, said I. I haven't been asleep.
How stupid. And you won't have breakfast or dinner again, I suppose.
I told you I won't. Forgive me.
If only you knew how ill this suits you. It's like a saddle on a cow.
You don't fancy you are going to scare me by that.
What does it matter to me that you're hungry? As though that would frighten me.
She was angry, but not for long. She soon began jibing at me again, and I wondered how it was that there was no anger in her. For she'll resent a thing a long time. She'll resent a thing with other people for a long time. Then it entered my head that she thinks so poorly of me that she can't even feel much resentment against me. And that's the truth.
"Do you know what the Pope of Rome is?" she asked.
"I've heard," I said.
"You've never learnt any universal history, Parfion Semyonovitch," said she.
"I never learnt anything," I said.
"I'll give you a story to read, then," she said. "There was once a pope, and he was angry with an emperor, and that emperor knelt barefoot before his palace for 3 days without eating or drinking till he forgave him. What do you suppose that emperor thought to himself, and what vows did he take while he was kneeling there?"
"Stay," she said. "I'll read it to you myself." She jumped up and brought the book.
"It's poetry," she said, and began reading me in verse how that emperor had vowed during those 3 days to avenge himself on the Pope for it.
"Don't you like that, Parfion Semyonovitch?" said she.
"That you've read."
"Ha! You say it's true yourself, then perhaps you are making vows. When she is married to me, I'll make her remember it all. I'll humble her to my heart's content."
"I don't know," said I. "Perhaps I am thinking so."
"How can you say you don't know?"
"Why, I don't know," said I. "I have no thoughts for that now."
"What are you thinking of now?"
"Well, you'll get up and walk past me, and I'm looking at you and watching you. Your skirt rustles and my heart sinks. You go out of the room, and I remember every little word of yours, your voice and what you said. And all last night I thought of nothing. I listened all the while how you were breathing in your sleep, and twice you stirred."
"And I dare say you don't think and you don't remember how you beat me," she said.
"Perhaps I do think of it. I don't know."
"And if I don't forgive you, and I won't marry you?"
"I've told you I'll drown myself."
"Perhaps you'll murder me first," she said, and seemed to ponder.
Then she was angry and went out. An hour later she came in to me so gloomy. "I will marry you, Parfion Semyonovitch," she said, "and not because I'm afraid of you. There's nothing but ruin anyway. What's better?" "Sit down," she said. "They'll bring you dinner directly. And if I marry you, I'll be a faithful wife to you," she added. "Don't doubt of that, and don't be uneasy." Then she was silent and said, "Anyway, you're not a flunky." Then she fixed the wedding day, and a week later she ran away from me to Lebedev here. When I came, she said, "I don't give you up altogether. I only want to wait as long as I like, because I am still my own mistress. You can wait too, if you like." And that's how we stand now. What do you think of all that, Lyov Nikolaevich?
"What do you think yourself?" Mushkin questioned back, looking sorrowfully at Rogozhin.
"Do you suppose I think?" broke from the latter. He would have added something, but paused in hopeless dejection. Mushkin stood up and would again have taken leave.
"I won't hinder you anyway," he said softly,
almost dreamily, as though replying to some secret inner thought of his own. "Do you know what?" said Rogozhin, suddenly more eager, and his eyes kindled. "How is it you give in to me like this?
Have you quite got over loving her? You used to be miserable anyway, I saw that. Then why is it you've come here in such haste? From pity? And his face worked with spiteful mockery. Ha ha!
You think I'm deceiving you now? Mushkin inquired.
No, I believe you. But I can't make it out. One might almost believe that your pity is greater than my love. A certain malice and an urgent desire to express himself at once glowed in his face.
Well, there's no distinguishing your love from hate, said Mushkin, smiling. It will pass, and then perhaps the trouble will be worse.
I tell you this, Brother Parfion, that I shall murder her.
Mushkin started. You will hate her bitterly for this love, for all this torture you are suffering now. What is strangest of all to me is that she can again mean to marry you. When I heard it yesterday, I scarcely believed it, and it made me so unhappy. You see, she has thrown you up twice and run away on the wedding day, so she has some foreboding. What does she find in you now? It's not your money, that's nonsense, and no doubt you've wasted a good deal of it by now. Can it be simply to get a husband? Why, she could find plenty of others. Any man will be better than you, because you really may murder her, and she knows that only too well now, perhaps. Is it because you love her so passionately? It's true, that may be it. I've heard there are women who want just that sort of love. Only...
Mushkin stopped and sank into thought.
Why are you smiling at my father's portrait again? Asked Rogojin, who was watching every movement, every change in Mushkin's face with extraordinary intentness.
Why did I smile? Oh, it struck me that if it were not for this burden laid upon you, if it were not for this love, you would most likely have become exactly like your father, and in a very short time, too. You would have settled down quietly in this house with an obedient and submissive wife. You would have been stern and sparing of words, trusting no one and feeling no desire to, doing nothing but heap up money in dreary silence. At the most, you would sometimes have praised the old books and been interested in the old believers' fashion of crossing themselves, and that only in your old age.
Laugh away. But do you know, she said the very same thing not long ago when she too was looking at that portrait. It's queer how you both say the same thing now.
Why, has she been in your house? Asked Mushkin with interest.
Yes. She looked a long time at the portrait and asked me about my father. You be just such another, she laughed to me afterwards. You have strong passions, Parfion Semyonovitch, she said. Such passions that you might have been carried by them straight off to Siberia, if you weren't intelligent too. For you have a great deal of intelligence, she said. And those were her words, would you believe it? It was the first time I'd heard her say such a thing. You would have soon given up all this silliness, and as you are quite an uneducated man, you would have begun saving money and have settled down like your father in this house, with your Skopsy. Maybe you would have gone over to their faith in the end, and have grown so fond of your money that you would have heaped up not 2 but 10 million, perhaps, and have died of hunger on your bags of money. For you are passionate in everything. You push everything to a passion. And that was just how she talked, almost in those very words. She had never talked to me like that before. You know she always talks nonsense with me, or jeers at me, and indeed she began laughing this time, but then she grew so dejected she walked all over the house, looked at everything and seemed scared. I'll change all this and do it up, or if you like I'll buy another house before we're married. No, no, she said. Nothing must be changed here. We'll live like this. I want to live with your mother, she said, when I become your wife. I took her to my mother. She was respectful to her, as if she had been her own daughter. For the last 2 years, mother has not been quite in her right mind. She's ill. And since my father died, she's become quite like a child. She can't talk, she can't walk, and only bows to everyone she sees. If we didn't feed her, I believe she wouldn't notice it for 3 days. I took my mother's right hand, folded her fingers. "Bless her, mother," said I. "She is going to the altar with me." and then she kissed my mother's hand with feeling. "Your mother must have had a great deal of sorrow to bear," said she. "She saw this book here. What, have you begun reading Russian history?" She said to me herself in Moscow once, "You should educate yourself. You might at least read Soloviev's Russian history. You know nothing at all." "Well, that's right," she said. "Go on reading. I'll write you a list myself of the books you ought to read first, shall I?" And never, never before had she talked to me like that, so that I was positively amazed. For the first time, I breathed like a living man.
"I'm very glad of that, Parfion," said Mushkin with sincere feeling. "Very glad. Who knows? After all, perhaps God will bring you together."
"That will never be," Rogozhin cried hotly.
"Listen, Parfion. Since you love her so, surely you want to gain her respect. And if you want to, you can't be without hope. I said just now that I was unable to comprehend what makes her marry you. But though I can't understand it, I have no doubt that there must be a sufficient sensible reason. She is convinced of your love, but she must believe in some of your good qualities also. It can't be otherwise. And what you said just now confirms this. You told me yourself that she has found it possible to speak to you in quite a different way from how she has spoken and behaved to you before. You are suspicious and jealous, and that has made you exaggerate everything you've noticed amiss. Of course she doesn't think so ill of you as you say. If she did, it would be as good as deliberately going to be drowned or murdered to marry you. Is that possible? Who would deliberately go to be drowned or murdered?
Parfion listened with a bitter smile to Mushkin's eager words. His conviction, it seemed, was not to be shaken.
"How dreadfully you look at me now, Parfion," broke from Mushkin with a feeling of dread.
"To be drowned or murdered," said Rogozhin at last. "Why, that's just why she is marrying me. Because she expects to be murdered. Do you mean to say, Prince, you've never yet had a notion of what's at the root of it all?"
"I don't understand you."
"Well, perhaps you really don't understand. They do say you are not quite right. She loves another man. Take that in. Just as I love her now, she loves another man now. And do you know who that other man is?"
"It's you."
"What? You didn't know?"
"Me?"
"You. She has loved you ever since that day. Her birthday. Only she thinks it's out of the question to marry you, because she thinks she would disgrace you and ruin your whole life. 'Everyone knows what I am,' she says. She still harps upon that. She told me all this straight out to my face. She is afraid of ruining and of disgracing you. But I don't matter. She can marry me. So much for what she thinks of me. Notice that, too.
But why did she run away from you to me and from me?
And from you to me? Why, all sorts of things come into her head. She's always in a sort of fever now. One day she'll cry out, 'I'll make an end of myself and marry you. Let the wedding be soon.' She hurries things on, fixes the day. But when the time comes near, she takes fright, or other ideas come to her, God knows. But I've seen it. She cries and laughs and shakes with fever. And what is there strange in her having run away from you? She ran away from you then because she realized how much she loved you. It was too much for her to stay with you. You said just now that I sought her out in Moscow. That's not true. She ran to me straight from you of herself. 'Fix the day,' she said. 'I'm ready. Give me champagne. Let's go to the gypsies,' she cries. She would have drowned herself long ago if she'd not had me. That's the truth. She doesn't do that because perhaps I am more dreadful than the water. It's from spite she is marrying me. If she marries me, I tell you for sure it will be from spite."
"But how can you? How can you?" cried Mushkin, but broke off. He looked at Rogozhin with horror.
"Why don't you finish?" the latter replied, grinning. "Would you like me to tell you what you are thinking to yourself at this very moment? How can she be his wife after this? How can I let her come to that? I know you think that."
"I didn't come here with that idea, Parfion. I tell you, it was not that I had in my mind."
It may be that you didn't come with that idea, and that wasn't in your mind, but now it certainly has become your idea. Well, that's enough. Why are you so upset? Can you really not have known it? You surprised me.
That's all jealousy, Parfion. It's all morbidness. You have exaggerated it all immensely, Mushkin muttered in violent agitation. What are you doing?
Leave it alone, said Parfion, and he quickly snatched from Mushkin's hand a knife which the latter had picked up from the table and put it back where it had been before, beside the book.
I feel as though I had known when I was coming to Petersburg, as though I had foreseen it, Mushkin went on. I didn't want to come here. I wanted to forget everything here, to root it out of my heart. Well, goodbye.
But what are you doing?
As he talked, Mushkin had absent-mindedly again picked up the same knife from the table, and again Rogojin took it out of his hands and threw it on the table. It was a plain knife that wouldn't shut up, with a horn handle and a blade 7 inches long and of about the usual breadth. Seeing that Mushkin had specially noticed that the knife had been twice taken out of his hands, Rogojin snatched it up in angry vexation, put it in the book, and flung the book on another table.
"Do you cut the pages with it?"
Mushkin asked, but almost mechanically, still apparently absorbed in deep thought.
"Yes."
"But it's a garden knife."
"Yes, it is. Can't one cut a book with a garden knife?"
"But it's quite a new one."
"What if it is new? Mayn't I buy a new knife?" Rogojin cried in a perfect frenzy at last, growing more exasperated at every word.
Mushkin started and looked intently at Rogojin.
"Ah, we are set," he laughed suddenly, rousing himself completely. "Excuse me, brother. When my head is heavy as it is now, and my illness, I become utterly, utterly absent-minded and ridiculous. I meant to ask you about something quite different. I've forgotten now. Goodbye."
"Not that way," said Rogojin.
"I've forgotten."
"This way. This way, come. I'll show you."